TED Audio Collective. Hi, TED Health listeners. It's Dr. Shoshana Ungerleiter. Today, something a little different. It's an excerpt from an episode of the TED Radio Hour. We thought you'd enjoy this idea in particular. To hear much more, you can follow the TED Radio Hour wherever you're listening to this. They've just released a fantastic series called Work, Play, Rest, all about how much these three things are changing and influencing our lives.
Support for this podcast comes from The Wonderful Company. If that name doesn't sound familiar to you, you probably know the pistachios that come from this company. Wonderful Pistachios is one of the highest protein nuts. Get snacking and get cracking with a snack that packs a protein punch. I love the various Wonderful Pistachio flavors. So in addition to the original flavor, I'm particularly fond of the salt and vinegar, and I keep little packets of them in my car so that I can eat and get some protein on the run. Visit wonderfulpistachios.com to learn more.
Hey everyone, it's Adam Grant. I host a podcast called Rethinking about the science of what makes us tick. This season, we're talking about navigating young adulthood with clinical psychologist Meg Jay.
If I had to pick one word that I hear from 20-somethings more than any other word in terms of where the struggles come from, it's uncertainty. And so I think just the uncertainty involved in how do you make those big life decisions? How do you take control of your life?
Find and follow Rethinking with Adam Grant wherever you're listening.
One of the truest, deepest forms of rest goes well beyond a good nap or a full night's sleep. For some animals, a more extreme form of rest comes to them every winter.
When we talk about hibernation, what we really mean is to do what squirrels or bears or hamster, bats, those all these animals do in winter when they don't have enough resources, enough food or water.
Matteo Cherry is a professor at the University of Bologna, where he studies hibernation.
They change what they need from the environment by entering in this very, very special state. So it's a bit more like a standby on a TV screen or on a computer.
And to put their body on standby, Matteo says that animals first have to find the right spot.
So what you're looking for is a place where you could be safe from predators, potentially invisible to the rest of the environment, where you can just wait. A place where you can be cozy and safe.
Then the body, heart, lungs, brain slow down to a creep. And there's a word for it.
Yes, we call that torpor. So torpor is the technical word that refers to a low metabolic state. And sometimes I say to my students, it's like a metabolic austerity. You don't spend anything more than what is strictly needed to exist. You could think of hibernation or torpor more correctly as the natural state that may be the closer to death without actually, going over.
Okay, so those are the basics of hibernation. But here's the thing about Matteo.
I'm actually working on try to replicate or simulate hibernation for human use.
Yeah, human hibernation. Matteo was studying whether it would be possible to put people into this extreme state of torpor.
I would say there is a clear path to try to reach this goal.
Okay, Matteo, I understand why animals would hibernate. But you think that there are reasons why humans would want to hibernate.
That's absolutely what we're thinking. It's a basket full of resources for medicine, for space travel, and it could really exploit a different state of the body, a different physiology that we are starting now to unraveling and understanding in deeper detail. and could lead to potentially disruptive application. I know disruptive is a hype word and maybe is counterproductive to say it, but I really think it would be disruptive.
Well, yeah, it definitely sounds disruptive. But okay, so let's start with space travel. You are working with the European Space Agency on this problem, figuring out how astronauts could travel years, even decades, into deep space, which would be really hard on the human body.
Yeah, having a trip that lasts, let's say, a decade in space, you have to imagine yourself, you are in a very confined space, night and day, every time, every minute, every hour. So that is pretty stressful. And then there are other problems. Your strength, your structure of your body. So muscle will become weak because of the lack of gravity. And as well for your bone, if they will not be able to keep you standing against the gravity of another planet, how are you going to stand or walk? Then there is the problem of radiation. So the amount of radiation you will get for this kind of trip, there's just too much. Unless we find some way to reduce this damage or protect ourselves from the damage.
Okay, so that's a lot of problems. But you think hibernation could do that, could work as protection?
That's absolutely right. First thing, obviously, you don't need that much food and water and resources when you're hibernated. And you don't produce much biological waste as well. So all of that is cleaner. Your muscle and your bone will probably preserve much of their structure and their strength. And finally, hibernation gives cells an interesting defense against radiation. It doesn't reduce, apparently, the damage radiation do to tissues, but it helps tissue repair those damage in a much better way than if we were not hibernated.
Wow, that is fascinating. But I don't think that many of us have plans to travel to Mars anytime soon. I will say, though, you are making me fantasize about going into hibernation for my next long-haul flight. Is that possible? Could we maybe one day put ourselves into a state of hibernation and wake up in a different time zone feeling pretty good?
That would be great. That would be fantastic. I hate long flights, so... I had a friend is like a trader in the stock market. He was asking me, could we go into torpor when the market goes down and wake up when the market goes up? So it will all depend on how easy and risky the technology would be. But why put a limit to our hope?
Now, you may be thinking at this point, okay, hibernation sounds cool, useful. But is it even possible in humans? And has it ever been done before? The answer is no, not yet. But researchers like Matteo are intrigued by stories of people entering a sort of state of torpor, including one published in 1800 about an entire village in Russia that would sleep through the winter.
There is a Russian term for this winter sleep. It's called lochka. I don't know if I pronounce it correctly. And apparently those peasants and villagers were gathering together in this large house in the center of the town to sleep the winter off together, just sleeping there waiting for spring to come.
Oh, I mean, that's, whether it's true or not, that is a beautiful story. It's like a fairy tale. But there is a famous story from the neurologist Oliver Sacks about a man that he called Uncle Toby, right?
Yes, definitely. Oliver Sacks, he was visiting a family on site for some other question. And he noticed this person, like he said, like icy frozen, still alive, though, with a body temperature of 69 Fahrenheit, so about 20 Celsius.
Yikes, cold.
Yes. And ask what happened to him. And they say, well, this is Uncle Toby. And 7 years ago, he's just stopped. He lives with us. We take care of him. We feed him. We shave him. We dress him. But he just stands there. So he suspected hypothyroidism as a possible cause of this strange behavior, and proposed to treat them with thyroid hormone at the time was available. And the family agreed, and Uncle Toby actually, he woke up. So he gave him the drug, and he wakes up, and he doesn't remember the 7 years that were passed. But then, and that would be a good ending story, but the story actually is sad in his end, because Uncle Toby had a cancer, a small cell lung cancer, and the cancer woke up with him, and then it killed him in a few months.
So does that mean that when Uncle Toby was in this sort of stupor, that maybe not only did he go to sleep, but maybe the cancer went to sleep during that time?
Yes, that is exactly the point. The idea is that the cancer and Uncle Toby had found a way to live both. So a provocative hypothesis would be that the cancer actually produced something that unlocked the ability of the brain to enter torpor. And then, therefore, the body entered torpor. And therefore, the cancer stopped growing, because that's what happened in torpor. The cancer usually stopped growing. And they both stay that way. And once we awake Uncle Toby, we also awake the cancer. And the story ends.
So when we hear that story, does it tell us something about the way that putting humans into hibernation or torpor might be used when it comes to treating something as aggressive and active as mutations in cells, cancer?
It could be. It could be used for this kind of clinical condition. Even more pressing would be for someone waiting for an organ transplant. You know, there are about 50 people pretty much every day between Europe and the United States died because of lack of organ. So if you could suspend them, now slowing their metabolism down, then you increase their chances to potentially find an organ. But in the case of Uncle Toby's story, the important part for us is that that seems to be a way in which the brain can be made induce hibernation, or can be reactivating this old state even in humans. And so it would be feasible. That's what we hope for.
I mean, do you imagine wings of hospitals filled with patients who are resting in a state of torpor, waiting for their cancer treatment or waiting for an organ transplant? Is that something that might happen?
Yes, that's what I envision.
So how would we do this, whether, you know, it is for space travel or for medicine or any number of purposes? Like, how would you put people into this state of hibernation?
So far, the greatest results were to induce into a state that very much resemble hibernation animals that are not able to enter hibernation or torpor. And we call... I call personally this state synthetic torpor.
No, so you induced this in animals in the lab.
Yes, and we were able to do it by silencing the activity of a little group of neurons in the very old part of our brain. In the past 10 years, there have been amazing discovery in the field. We have now a better idea of the brain network that control torpor. We have uncovered other hotspots that could be target for inducing torpor. So a lot of exciting thing happened in the last 10 years.
So can we talk about waking up? I had the pleasure of having a routine procedure earlier this week where I was put under general anesthesia, and it is just the weirdest thing coming out of it. You're like, wait, where was I for the last half hour? What would waking up from this state of torpor or hibernation be like?
It's the most dangerous part, I would say, of hibernation. And there is really little that we know about how this animal wakes up. The Arctic ground squirrel, his brain is at -1 Celsius. How is this brain able to bring the body back to normal? And that's still quite unknown. But what we see is definitely, especially for the brain, is the most plastic state I've ever seen as a neurophysiologist. So synapses get form and reform is a neurostorm of molecules, of active brain molecules. So it could be something about like dreaming, or it could provide you sensation of dreamlike state, my guess. Maybe it's even pleasurable. We don't know, or maybe not. But after you wake up, I would say you will also be very, very sleepy. You need to sleep after hibernation. The reason why, still mystery. Like, the entire time you spent in torpor was sleep deprivation.
So you need to rest after your big rest.
Oh, yeah. It's hard to tell that hibernation is rest. Suspension. You are retiring from the game of life for a little bit of time.
That's neurophysiologist and hibernation researcher Matteo Cherry. He's part of our three-part series, Work, Play, Rest. You can find the whole series and many more TED Radio Hour episodes at npr.org or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Anoush Zamarodi, and thanks so much for listening.